Welcome to The Big Picture with your host, Harrison Newton.
Hit the subscribe and share the word.
Good morning, good evening, and happy weekend to all the listeners today. I'm always interested in when and how people tune in, but thanks for joining us. With me today, I have a bit of a regular now, Nick Jacoby. So hello, Nick Jacoby.
Hello, Harrison. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. And we've got an interesting topic today. Just before we start, make sure to keep sharing and recommending the show to your friends. I've realized that's the authentic way we want to get this across. But anyway, today we're talking Kiwis, conservation and caring. All with a C.
Triple threat.
Yeah. I know, I'm joking, but we are talking Kiwis conservation and probably community, so let's crack in. As you guys are aware by now, Nick Jacoby has a lovely girlfriend, Alana.
I do, my lovely girlfriend, Alana. She's also sitting in with me, listening.
Staring at you as you said that.
Staring and staring.
Oh, it's positive, though.
It's all positive.
So I wanted to start off by introducing how you got into your conservation work that you've been doing. It's really started off by Alana's birthday present to you. So what was that?
Well, I think before that, I've always been an outdoors active person, and I've always taken an interest in conservation, but I haven't had a lot of the opportunities to get stuck in. I mean, there's always those
one-day events
where you go and, you know, pick up rubbish for your community and clap your hands and say you've saved the world.
Oh, the corporates do it one day a year.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Hey, this is us making up for all the trouble we get into.
Exactly. A couple of hours, post on their social media. It's not authentic, but I was looking, I was looking for an authentic way to get stuck in, and Alana was kind of the gateway for conservation on a big scale. And it all started with a birthday present she had gifted me, which was a visit to her dad's wilderness property.
So Alana invited you down. Her dad owns a, what does he own again? A reserve, like a native reserve?
He owns lots of land, but in this particular example, it was 12,000 hectares called Mungatanifa, which is about 2 hour drive northwest of Napier.
Wow, because there's so much land around there with so little road access.
Exactly, yeah. So it's a 9 hour drive from Auckland, or an hour and 10 minute chopper ride, which we took.
Wow, because I remember this. Nick and me worked together, so he was a fellow corporate cog. And when he told me his birthday present from his girlfriend, a helicopter trip down to close to Napier, I was blown away. So what was it? What'd you do?
So I could probably talk about how fun the helicopter ride was for the next 20 minutes, but we'll assume it was fun. And we arrived in this big bush, and it was kind of nothing that I'd kind of experienced before. I'd done lots of tramps, but this was such rich land of conservation and history.
So what were you doing flying down in basically a chopper down to Gisborne? Why did you need a chopper?
So when you're dealing with Kiwi conservation, choppers are a useful tool because you use a chopper to essentially transport the Kiwi egg in a safe way. So yeah. A Kiwi egg's really susceptible to knocks and bumps in cars, and when you're walking them, they can damage the egg.
Wow.
So when you're in a helicopter, there's less knocks, so there's less chance of them being damaged. So there's the rate of survival is a lot greater when you're in a chopper.
Wow, what a fun
excuse.
So
it's a useful tool, and it's also quite fun.
Yeah. Wow, because do these eggs come out fresh, and how long do you look after them before they get the chopper ride? Dude, by the way, that's like transporting gold or something.
Exactly.
Real hectic.
So so some of the Kiwi on the property are transmitted, so they have these little transmitters on their ankle. And what we do is we go out at night and we find their nest, and we wait. We use the transmitter to make sure they're off the nest. It's kind of like sonar. So if a Kiwi is on their nest not moving, it will just have a consistent beep. But once they get off their nest to feed, it kind of goes in and out of trees, and you can hear it. The beeps are a little bit...
Wow. Wait, so do you go in with a gun?
It's a kind of like a antenna. Aerial that you spin around above your head.
Wow. And so how many Kiwis did you helicopter back up to Auckland for your birthday?
So I was with my girlfriend, and she's, you have to be experienced to kind of do this. So we had our own nest, and so we went out at night and we waited for the Kiwi to get off its nest, and it got off its nest at about 3 a.m. So up until then, we were checking every 30 minutes just to see if it got up. And once the kiwi gets off its nest, we go in and snatch the egg from the nest. So we pulled out 2 healthy eggs.
Wow. From one nest?
From one nest, yep.
So the mum had 2 eggs?
Yes.
How big are these eggs?
They're quite large. They're
like a mango size.
I would say
no, bigger than
a mango. Maybe a large, maybe a pineapple, smaller than a pineapple.
Wow. Yeah, like slightly smaller than a pineapple.
Yeah.
Because do you know how much it is of their body weight? Isn't it like some
70%.
So the egg makes up 70% of their body weight.
I think so, yeah.
How did this one have 2?
I don't know these questions.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like no one might know these questions. But that's really cool. So
I'm not an expert at this point, you know. I've just come in
fresh off their chopper.
Yeah.
Down into
the jungle. Not knowing much about what the work is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So once you got these eggs, did you put your hand in the nest?
Yeah, so you reach underground, and they're kind of up to a meter and a half deep. Wow. So you kind of reach in, you have to carefully bring it out, and you can't sort of twist them upside down or
move it
really. So you have to be really careful, and we place them gently into a container with heaps of foam and stuff around it. And we basically we go to sleep for a couple of hours, and then the next morning we fly them out to the Kiwi hatchery, which is in Rotorua.
Wow, that is so cool. Well, well done for that, man, because I feel like that's a good place to start off talking about all the nature conservation you've done up. And those Kiwis are real interesting. So Alana Dad has a bit of a Kiwi restoration program, and they just released their 400th Kiwi, is it, Alana? That's the nod of approval. So moving on, after this birthday, you sort of said a bit of a fuck it and left your job, didn't you?
Exactly, yeah. All the stars were aligning. Alana had left her job at this point. I'd loved my trip down in the bush, and I wanted to do more of it. And also I was in a position at work where I probably couldn't see myself moving anytime soon.
Any higher, because you're already a big dog.
No.
Nick Jacoby is a 24-year-old big dog. I'm
not,
proud of
not
you,
not entirely
man.
True, but... so yeah, I pulled the pin, and there was a lot of support saying,
do it.
Good on you, do something different and have purpose. And then the other side was the skeptics that say, you know, it's COVID times, you're an idiot for
doing
pulling this,
this
opportunity at the biggest company, you know, all that
a
carry
big,
on.
Nice multinational.
Yeah, your CV is not going
to... Because that's what I wanted to talk about, because both me and you ended up leaving the same company that we worked for. And one of the biggest things is people always talk about is protect that CV, protect how long your tenure is at this job, because it matters so much.
Mm.
And I guess that was the pushback you would have felt.
Exactly, yeah. So away we went in January. We basically packed up our things and drove to the bush where we would learn more about conservation and all that comes with it, such as predator control.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, well, that's cool, Nick. And I guess that follows on to my next point, because we're trying to start a creative revolution on the show, and you quitting your job has allowed you to fulfill a bit of a dream, and it gets back to... It's so crazy that people just stay in those jobs for life, you know? You had 2 weeks off before you started your job, and that could have been you for life.
Exactly, yeah.
So you would recommend a bit of a break for people, something new?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was through the education system, through to university, through to a job. There was no really, in some ways, there's no end point of a mini retirement where you just sort of sit back and look at life and ask yourself big questions.
And were you able to do that on this journey?
Absolutely. I think when you're in the bush, it's a it's a great equalizer. You know, there's no politics, or there's no one telling you can't do something.
And there's no outside world critiquing it.
Exactly, yeah. So your conscience was thinking quite clearly in the bush, and I could kind of understand more about myself in a way.
Exactly, because you would have had no cell phone coverage most of the time.
No cell phone coverage. Yeah.
Wow. And I think that's why I recommend getting out in the bush, because you can just... There's something so energizing about being around that nature as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And like you said, you get that clarity and that space, and it's almost alone time too, just to be with your hands and your thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I was out doing some walking in the bush just by myself, having some alone time, and I came across a trap that had a cat stuck in it.
Nick, man, I don't know if we can tell this story, but all I can say is that disposing of animals is not constantly fun. And unfortunately, in the wild, feral cats kill a lot of birds, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. My family has 3 cats.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate every single one of them. They're the worst animals. It's a household pet. We live in a bushy area, and there's lots of tuis and pigeons, and there's wood pigeons and fantails and stuff, and it's not uncommon to come across a dead native bird, which is really sad to see.
Wow. Because it happens a lot too.
Happens a lot.
Have they ever got a wood pigeon? That's one question.
No. It would take a lot to get a wood pigeon, I would think. But even if you feed the cat's belly, they can still go and catch a big bird, which is pretty sad. You can't train them or...
Exactly, and the bells don't look as effective. And unfortunately, I'm a huge cat fan. Like, my cats growing up were part of, you know, the family. And maybe we can find better ways, because I don't think we can let people not have animals, but stuff, even starting with having a bell on the collar. Do you think that would help?
Yeah, I think that's a good start. And just having that awareness that your friendly cat can be a nasty predator.
Exactly, and it will make you wonder how many cats to have, for a start.
Exactly, yeah. And a lot of control. I mean, there was, in this bush property, I think once upon a time, one guy brought his cat and they had kittens, and then now there's basically feral cats in this wild bush property. So they're slowly just, after all these years, slowly just clawing back these cats.
Wow.
Because they're causing a big upset. Murder. Yeah,
because they can catch more than a bird a day. I actually remember one of the saddest stories. There was an island somewhere, and there was just one lighthouse keeper on it, but he brought his cat, and the cat every day for a year would bring back a different bird for him, and the cat actually ended up wiping out half the bird population on the island and extincting all these birds from one cat. One cat did that. That's the one problem.
Yeah.
And that's where it's sad, because New Zealand wants to be predator-free in 2050, but we're only talking about rats and stoats and possums. We're not talking about feral cats.
And dogs is actually a big one too, with kiwis.
Oh, really?
So when you drive into this bush property, there's big signs saying no dogs, and all dogs that come onto the property are Kiwi certified, which means
they sniff kiwis.
Yeah, they know how to interact with kiwi, and they won't kill the kiwi, essentially, but... There's a lot of dogs out there that have killed kiwi, and the owners aren't necessarily aware of
what's
they're
happening.
Doing. Yeah, because, you know, they might scurry off into the bush and be gone a couple of minutes, and then they could have just quite easily nailed a kiwi.
And I know it sounds really bad, because my lifestyle at the moment as a independent journalist, I go down to Mount Eden Village every day for a coffee, and unfortunately every day I do find at least one dog doze. Because unfortunately, when you let them off so much, like, you're not going to be able to see them all the time and find it.
Yeah.
And that's where dogs are, you know. But again, you can't let people love their dogs. But it's about being a better dog owner.
Yeah. For me, before that experience, I had a bit of a Shelby Wright attitude. So I would go walking in some parks, and they would have put your dog on leashes.
Dude, I hated your dog. Your dog bit me.
I think
he's like, you always say it's because he's a puppy, but he's like 3 years old.
I think you deserved it, Harrison. Careful you didn't bite something else off.
Yeah, no good. That's why I'm fucking freaked out by the blokes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's just about responsible ownership. And So what is the next steps for us? That's probably the in our conservation journey.
Yeah, that's a good question because from what I understand, kiwi survival relies on people like Doc and people like Kalana's dad, Simon, with a big enterprise focus. So It's basically a conservation, from what I take out of it, is a charity, and it's all about a feel-good factor.
And it's a community.
Yeah, but on the other side of that, from where I stand, it's hard to see a big future when it is a charity and it's not commercialized, or there's no profit in it, or it's just a big money sucking thing.
Exactly, and unfortunately that's where 1080 comes in, and 1080 is the poison that they drop from the helicopters to kill rodents, and it's the only effective money saving option they have. So Doc enhances it, but what do you think about that? Because is that part of the future? Because unfortunately, it kills mammals sometimes. So,
from my experience, when you're dealing with land of this size, it's not possible to finance traps throughout the whole property. So you've got a choice of, do we do nothing or do we do something and maybe lose a small percent?
Yeah, because there's, unfortunately, it's those opportunity costs, right?
Exactly.
And so do you think it's a good idea? Because I think I do when I look at it that way. If it's 90% good because, you know, all these extra birds can grow, but there's 10% drop off, you know, do you go for utility and what's best everything?
I don't think there's a silver bullet. I think for this property, they use traps throughout a lot of the property that you could drive to and have access to the traps. But that also requires a property manager to come and check the traps and feed the traps and all of those things that come with it.
And that's a full-time job. Exactly, That's 50, 60 hours a week. Those blokes
who's gonna pay for that?
And the female staff, Wow. So that's sort of the next steps. But thanks for coming on, Jacoby, and talking nature. You've always been
thanks,
a nature
Mr. Harrison.
Bro.
It's good to be here. And thank you, listeners.
And do you want to shout out the trust?
Yes, the trust is called Life Force Restoration Trust.
So you can go to their website and check out their mission and what they're doing, can't you?
You can. I'd give it a go. We'll see what they're about. It's pretty interesting.
Thanks, everyone. The Instagram page is going really well, so pop along and check it out. And if you like it, give it a follow, because I'll be posting pictures and content that back up this podcast, so we're not just talking schmack. We'll see some of your beautiful videos. Okay, thanks everyone. Talk soon.
That was The Big Picture. Hit the subscribe and share the word.